First of all, I would like to acknowledge the reference which is relevant to my talk, especially the last four references which is directly related to what I'm going to talk about. Very early on, since the discovery of the acoustic wave anomaly, Halpern, Lee, and Reed proposed a very appealing picture to understand the physics as being better half. In this picture, one viewed the electron as a composite fermion which carried two quanta of fictitious magnetic flux running in the direction opposite to that of the external magnetic field. In this representation, one changed the original problem of electron moving in external magnetic field to a more complicated problem where we have composite fermions moving in external magnetic field, but also interacting with each other via a statistical magnetic flux. Through a canonical diagrammatic approach, one can show that the current-current correlation function of the electrons can be obtained by stringing together the so-called irreducible bubble of composite fermions. The bubble, those are diagrams of particle hole diagrams of composite fermions which are irreducible with respect to cutting of an external gauge of a statistical gauge propagator, which is indicated as the dashed line. In more familiar terms, this actually tells you that the electron resistivity tensor, rho alpha beta, is related to the composite fermion resistivity tensor, rho alpha beta CS, by an off-diagonal term, and this is nothing but the Hall conductivity at filling factor a half. This formal, although exact derivation, actually has a vivid physical explanation. The physics behind that formula is that if you have a hole bar and you push a current through the hole bar, you can view this experiment in two different pictures. One is you can view it in terms of electrons, and the other is you can view that in terms of the composite fermions. If you view it in terms of the composite fermions, it turns out that the longitudinal voltage drop seen by the composite fermions is equal to that of the electrons. However, the transverse voltage drop, transverse to the current, is equal to that of the electrons minus 2 times H over E squared times the charge current. And this additional term is very simple because it is actually generated by the moving flux current of the composite fermions. So if you have a moving flux current in the x direction, you generate a electric field in the y direction. You put all the right unit, you get precisely this factor, which implies the previous connection between the electron resistivity tensor and that of the composite fermion. Well, one might ask, why do I bother to go to this representation? Why do I bother to go from the original electron problem to a more complicated problem where the composite fermions interact via gauge interaction? Well, the advantage of this representation is that, remember, we view each electron as a composite fermion carrying two quanta of fictitious flux running in the opposite direction. So on average, the statistical flux carried by the composite fermions cancel the real external flux. Thus, at mean field level, the composite fermions sees no net magnetic field. However, we have to recall that the external magnetic field is a static one, but this internal statistic magnetic field is a dynamic one because it's carried by the particle. So one has to ask, to what extent this mean field cancellation actually carries over when you include the fluctuation of the statistical flux. And the conjecture is that if you do include the fluctuation of the statistic magnetic flux, it will not alter the statement that you have composite fermions moving in zero magnetic field. The sole effect of the fluctuation of statistical magnetic flux is to modify the so-called Fermi liquid parameters, perhaps in a singular fashion. But still, even in the presence of flux fluctuations, you still have composite fermions moving in zero magnetic field. Of course, that's a very nice that conjecture is very important, because that enables you to write down the form of the otherwise very complicated quantity, which we call the composite fermion resistivity tensor. So let me rephrase what I said. In my opinion, there's a conjecture which I call the composite Fermi liquid conjecture. That is, after you include the fluctuation of the statistical magnetic flux, we still can view the composite fermions as some kind of Fermi liquid in the absence of a net magnetic field. And if that's the case, the zero magnetic field physics of the composite fermions implies the new equal to half of the physics of the electron. Now, in the next few transparencies, I would like to revisit this conjecture. Since the sum over all statistic flux fluctuation is a formidable task, at least to me, so I would like to ask, is there a symmetry constraint I can look for which will put some constraint on the possible behavior of composite fermions? It turns out that there is such a constraint, although in order to realize this constraint, I have to ask you to consider a simplified problem. And this problem is that I will ask you to imagine that the cyclotron gap H bar omega C is infinity, and therefore I can project the physics into the lowest Landau level. So I will consider only the lowest Landau level. When that is done, we have the lowest Landau level. There's a symmetry appear at filling factor half, and that symmetry is the invariance of the Hamiltonian on the particle-hole conjugation. The particle-hole conjugation is the usual one. That is, if you have inside the wave function, if you have some occupation pattern of the single particle orbitals, you just change it to the conjugate pattern. Under the particle conjugation, the electron conductivity tensor is changed to the hole conductivity tensor. And this particle-hole conjugation formula is actually very easy to understand. The reason that there's a E squared over H here is because in the new, after the particle-hole conjugation, the new vacuum is actually a full Landau level. A full Landau level has a 1 times E squared over H whole conductance, but it has zero longitudinal conductivity. And this change in sign is, of course, due to the particle-hole conjugation. Now, suppose the filling factor is equal to 1 half, then nu is equal to 1 minus nu. Moreover, if the Hamiltonian is invariant under the particle-hole symmetry, then we can erase the H here, and that will give you the whole conductivity of the electron to be equal to 1 half times E squared over H. Well, luckily, this constraint that the electron hole conductivity has to be equal to a half times the quantum of conductance is actually enough to put a stringent constraint on the possible behavior of composite fermion. To see that, all you need to do is to combine this constraint with the previous connection formula, which relates the electron resistivity tensor with that of the composite fermion. You only need to take literally a tiny narrow a strip of paper to convince yourself that putting these two formulas together implies that the composite fermion sigma xy has to be equal to minus 1/2 times E squared over H, so long as rho xx of composite fermion squared plus rho xy of composite fermion squared is not equal to zero. Of course, in pure system, if you have Galilean invariance, rho xx composite fermion is equal to zero. And so this quantity in pure system could very well be zero. But the moment you introduce the slightest amount of disorder, this quantity will not be equal to zero. Well, so although strictly speaking, this statement is only valid when I have a non-zero amount of disorder, but however, I believe that it holds in the pure system as well. The reason I believe that is for the following physical argument. Let's ask, what is the physical meaning of this expression? In order to understand that, let us imagine we insert an electron into the 2D system at the origin. If we view this Gedanken experiment in terms of composite fermions, we have inserted a charge carried by composite fermion. Also, we have inserted 2 units of fictitious magnetic flux. This time-dependent inserted magnetic flux induces a EMF, and whose direction runs around concentric circles. Through the whole effect of the composite fermion, this EMF induced radial current. If this sign, if the whole conductivity of the composite fermion is minus, this current flows out. If this is plus, the current flows in. When the value of the whole conductivity is exactly equal to half, the time integrated current, so the total charge that flows out during the insertion, is exactly 1 unit of the electronic charge. So sigma xy of composite fermion equal to minus a half actually implies the electric screening, the screening of the electronic charge that is inserted. I should emphasize that this is different from the Fermi liquid view of screening, because in that picture, the screening of the screening occurs through the density response. But in my picture, the response is through the Hall effect of the composite fermion. So, what's the big deal of the composite fermion having minus a half times E squared over H conductivity? Well, the reason that this is significant is because if sigma xy composite fermion is not equal to zero, it's at odds with the notion that the composite fermions form a zero magnetic field Fermi liquid. Well, I ask you to consider a problem which is an idealized one, namely a problem in the lowest Landau level. But we know in real life we don't have a lowest Landau level. So what I'm talking about, is it bear any relevance to reality at all? In this transparency, I show you the experimental data obtained by Hanwen Jiang's group at UCLA. Hanwen has a gated gallium arsenide sample, and here the dotted line is new equal to a half, he looked at samples with various densities at different temperature. So for instance, for fixed density, each curve represents the measurement for different temperature. The curves cross, sigma xy cross at near equal to half, and within experimental arrow, sigma xy is equal to 1/2 e squared over h. However, if you look at rho xy, mysteriously they also cross, but the crossing point is not at near equal to 1/2. The cross, the value within arrow is equal to 2 times h over e squared. If this is happening exactly at near equal to 1/2, that will be the completely be consistent with the expectation of the composite Fermi liquid theory. Now, you might say, why should I make a big deal of this small departure here? The reason is that he has done systematic studies. That is, he changed the he applied the gate voltage and changed the density of the sample. And this here, this is a plot of the carrier density versus the dopant density versus the carrier density, and this is the magnetic field. The dashed line is near equal to 1/2. Han Wang has marked the location where sigma xy equal to 1/2 by circle. So each one of those points corresponding to the crossing point of different temperature. He marked the point at which rho xy cross, and as you can see, as you change the density, they systematically depart. As the density become very, very high, they coincide. Later on, Han Wang and the collaborators did a very interesting exercise. That is, they take their measured electron resistivity tensor, converted that to the conductivity tensor, and do this particle hole conjugation. Okay. Now, after they have done the particle hole conjugation, of course, they can invert the tensor again to get rho alpha beta of composite of holes. And what they see is that if you look at this picture, you see the rho xy of electron has crossings, and after they have done that inversion, the whole rho xy looks something like this, and they mark the crossing point of the hole resistivity, which are marked by the solid square, and for high density, they look pretty symmetric around near equal to 1/2. So I'm not trying to use this to prove that in real sample you have genuinely exact particle hole symmetry, but just want to show you that this notion of particle hole symmetry bears some relevance in real systems. Now, having said all this, we begin to seek for a theory of near equal to 1/2, which is particle hole symmetric. I should emphasize that recently there are several efforts occurred almost around the same time in this direction. Let me describe my version of this new description. Okay, suppose the electron were bosons, then they will be very happy at near equal to 1/2 because they can condense into a Laughlin liquid, incompressible quantum Hall liquid. Unfortunately, they carry Fermi statistics, and Fermi statistics frustrate this formation of the quantum Hall liquid. To quantify this frustration, we can view each electron as a boson carries one quanta of fictitious magnetic flux. Just like in the fermion Chern-Simons theory, we can view an electron as a fermion carry two quanta, and here we can view it as a boson carry one quanta of fictitious magnetic flux. Now, this fictitious magnetic flux, in some sense, just like externally applied flux, which suck in the density of of the nu equal to 1/2 quantum Hall liquid, which in turn forces somewhere else to nucleate holes on top of the nu equal to 1/2 quantum Hall liquid. So the low energy theory of the problem consists of particles and holes. And please forgive me for this messy formula, but please bear with me. This is actually quite simple. Now, curl of A is this external magnetic is this fictitious magnetic flux carried by the particle. Curl B is the hole, is the quasi hole on top of the nu equal to 1/2 quantum Hall liquid. If you integrate out the cyclotron degree of freedom in the nu equal to 1/2 liquid, which corresponded to in Shankar sense doing the unitary transformation and eliminate the oscillator degree of freedom, then you get the following effective action at long wavelengths. This term, if you forget of everything else, this term actually describes the statistics of quasi-particle and quasi-hole on top of a nu equal to 1/2 both quantum Hall liquid. This term is the Chern-Simons term which attaches the flux to the boson. And this J is the three current of the Chern-Simons boson. Its presence is actually to quantize the flux in B. In fact, here, as you can notice, that I split minus B dot J as two terms. If you add it together, it's actually minus B dot J. So it serves to quantize the flux of the quasi-holes. Now, I can combine these two terms. Now, in at this level, J is a bosonic free current, but I can combine these two terms, and the net effect is J becomes a fermionic current. It's actually the electronic current. To discuss the dynamics, let me fix the gauge. Okay, I choose to fix the temporal gauge, I set A naught equal to B naught equal to 0. And hence, I only left with the vector part of A and B. And allow me do this rename Z hat cross A minus B as a vector P. Then the action acquire a very simple form. The Coulomb interaction is a interaction between the polarization charge, so P turns out to behave like a polarization field, and the rest of the action is P cross P dot and P cross J, and we have a, because of the gauge fixing, we have a constraint, which is the Coulomb law, that is minus divergent P is equal to J naught minus rho bar. So here the change in density is written as minus diverging of a vector field, so this P behaves like an electric polarization. Now, P is actually the electric polarization on top of the nu equal to 1/2 quantum Hall liquid produced by the quasi-particle and the quasi-host. If we label J, if we write J as in this form and P in this form and substitute into the previous formula, we obtain the action obtained by Shankar, Murthy, and by Pasquier and Hodan. The physical picture now is that we have a nu equal to 1/2 quantum Hall liquid, and running on top of it, there are dipoles formed by the quasi-particle and quasi-host. The action I show you has a very rich symmetry. That is, if you replace P by P plus a purely transverse part, you find that the action is invariant so long as the current, the electronic current, is conserved. Here, I have to emphasize that this is in the absence of the edge. Okay? In the presence of the edge, you obtain an additional edge term. And this, actually, this z hat cross gradient phi described the shape deformation of the two decks. Because of this symmetry, we can restrict P to be purely longitudinal. Once we have done that, we are facing with this action under the constraint that P is purely longitudinal, also the divergence of P is equal to the change of the density. Now, see, in this equation, Z hat cross P coupled to J, exactly like an external gauge field coupled to J. Now, if you assume that you know the response function of the electrons, you can actually deduce the effective action for the P's. But here we have to be careful, we have to take care of the constraint very carefully. Now, through the whole response, P will induce a density change. If you require the whole response of the electron will give you the density change induced by the P through the whole effect of the electron be consistent with this constraint, you find that sigma xy of the electron has to be equal to half. So here you can see how important particle hole symmetry is. Actually, in some sense, this constraint is enforcing the particle hole symmetry. The pure transverse response of the electrons renormalize the action for P, and at one loop level, you can show that the density-density correlation function, which is diverging P correlation function, obey this form, where pi tt is the electron transverse correlation function. Now, unfortunately, we don't know what's the electron transverse correlation function, but I believe we can safely say that as frequency goes to zero, the electron responds diamagnetically. In that case, pi tt goes like q squared as omega goes to zero, which is sufficient to show that the compressibility of the electron at nu equal to half is finite. So, okay. In the presence of external field, the action just adds an additional term here. But the important message is that in this picture, the electron conductivity tensor is related to the dipole conductivity tensor via this additional, instead of the resistivity tensor. Hence, particle hole symmetry simply means that the dipole sigma xy is equal to zero. And physically, this means that the total current of the sample is equal to the current of the dipole plus the background current of the oscillator. There is actually a diagrammatic relation between what we call the conductivity of the dipole with the irreducible bubble of composite fermion, but I'm afraid I have no time to talk about that. So let me flip up my last transparency. So here we have two pictures for nu equal to half. One is the fermion Chern-Simons theory, which enjoys tremendous success when compared with experiment, and we have neutral fermion theory. Their relation, the composite fermion and the neutral fermion, they relate to electrons in quite different way. However, when we come down to the electronic response function, they give very similar predictions. So this remained a puzzle to me. That is, are those two theories strictly equivalent? Why does the RPA calculation in fermion Chern-Simons theory, which does not obviously respect particle hole symmetry, give such good pi naught naught and pi tt, the pure longitudinal and pure transverse response functions? Thank you very much for your attention.
The last statement. If I understood correctly, there is a difference in prediction between the two theories, isn't there? Because one gives rho xy equals 2 and the other one gives sigma xy equals 1 half.
Right, but in the presence of rho xx, they are different.
So in the presence of rho xx,
right,
there is a difference.
Right.
So can you trace in your diagrammatic where exactly the difference emerges?
The what we call the composite fermion conductivity tensor is 1 over I omega times the irreducible bubbles. What's in the same language phrase in terms of the composite fermion, the dipole conductivity is equal to the bare Chern-Simons propagator times actually the self-energy, the entire self-energy of the Chern-Simons propagator. The particle hole symmetry restricts this entire series to be equal to zero, which might not be consistent with this quantity being equal to zero.
So if you were doing mu is 1/4, you would get different results, different structural results?
That's a good question. I haven't thought about mu equals 1/4 because...
bosons.
Right, no, but there I have, I mean this entire approach is very much motivated by the particle hole symmetry. I haven't thought about the new equal quantum, which I probably should.
Yeah. So,
Yeah.
I'm wondering if you could
Oh, okay. That's a very, very good question. The question is that how do I know in the previous experimental data I show you that the dashed line is nu equal to half? Is that what you are asking? Yeah, that's a very, very good question. And actually, I don't think, strictly speaking, that we know. The only thing I want to tell you is there exists a whole range of density at which sigma xy cross at a fixed filling factor. And the rho xy cross also, but its crossing point depends on density. That's the only thing I can say. Okay? This line originally marked by Han Wen, not by me, as nu equal to half. But strictly speaking, how do I know that's nu equal to half? That's a very good question. But I only want to tell you that sigma xy does cross for a range of density at the same filling factor. And I call that filling factor nu equal to half.
I think we'll have to leave it there because time is running short. Remind the speakers to give their transparencies to the organizers at the start. And I think we'll have to start again.